You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
Welcome to A.G. Parker's Cabinet of Curiosities, an inclusive podcast focused on queer, disabled and marginalised artists and their art. You can support the podcast by signing up to Patreon. And oh my God, guess what? There's a new Patreon tier. If you've ever wanted to ask a writer for advice on drafting or a drag king for tips on wigs, you could now join the Curiouser and Curiouser tier. This lets you ask the talented creatives on the podcast something you're dying to know about art or life or anything, really. And I'll ask the next most fitting guest for their thoughts. This will help me to do things like buy transcript software to make the podcast more accessible. And eventually, if I get enough of you, I can pay my podcast guests. What? I know. Wild, right? Find out more on the Patreon page. You can also buy me a coffee on Buy Me a Coffee, which you can find on my link tree. And now, on with the show. Today on the podcast, I've got Helen Bowell, who is a poet, editor, and producer. Her debut pamphlet, The Barman, released by Bad Betty Press in 2022, oh my God, I can't speak this morning, was a Poetry Book Society choice. She co-directs Dead Women Poet Society, which resurrects women poets of the past at events, runs Bi Plus Lines, a project for Bi Plus Poets, and produces events for the Poetry Translation Centre. Welcome to the podcast, Helen. How are you?
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'm good. I am cold. It's a cold day.
And this will go out like literally a few days after we record, so you all know how cold it has been. Think of us shivering away as we... Have you got a hot drink?
I do. I've got some hot water, which is plain, but is solely there for the purpose of keeping me warm.
I've got lemon, ginger and honey because I'm finally able to have citrus again after like 3 years of not being able to drink it. So I'm like having all of the citrus I can.
Yeah, enjoy.
Thank you. Cool. So let's jump right into it. I feel really grateful because I've already met you. I was part of the Bylines book, which was... Thank you so much for accepting one of my poems. And I got to meet you at the launch at Queer Britain, which was incredible.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it? It was a good night.
It's such a fantastic venue and one that I'm ashamed to say I didn't know existed until you were like, hey, do you want to come to the launch?
Yeah, well, it's brand new. I think it only opened after the pandemic. And it's the first and only, I think, LGBTQ plus museum in the UK. So, yeah.
It's amazing. So for anyone listening who hasn't been yet, please go. I've been twice now because we didn't really get to look around it much at the launch. And so I had to go back and it's just absolutely fabulous. How did you manage to swing getting the launch there? Because that was pretty impressive.
I hope that they're okay with me saying this, but I emailed them when I was putting... So for Bylines, I put together an Arts Council project grant bid. So I had to apply for funding. Mm. And when you apply for funding, you have to basically have everything confirmed like a whole year in advance. And so I was sort of cold calling loads of venues being like, do you want to put on a workshop or a launch with me in 12 to 18 months? And Queer Britain was one of the venues that I approached to either run a workshop, which we did earlier in the project, or a launch event. And they never got back to me. Tragic. But then when... like this year when all of the Bylines activity was going on, we'd done all the workshops, we'd opened for submissions, I think they must have seen it online and they were thinking, what can we do for Bi Visibility Month in September? And they got in touch with me and they wanted to do some poetry, and they got in touch with me and said, would you be interested in doing an event? And so it was like, yeah. I'm still interested. We ended up doing the launch on Bi Visibility Day, which was 2 weeks ahead of when I had planned the first launch event to be in my timeline. Oh, so wow. That meant that we had to speed up everything just a little bit so that we'd have books for the launch event. Yeah, that was a really long answer. But yeah,
No,
it's
I love
funny how
it.
that happens sometimes.
That's amazing. Yeah, wow, I love that. I mean, but you're right, it's wild that you have to reach out to people and say, hey, like in this future that we know so little about, would you like to
Yeah,
pretend to do something together?
exactly.
Is that a
Yeah, and
bit
then, like, staff change and everything. I don't think the person who reached out to me, I don't think they even worked there at that point when I'd sent that email initially. So, yeah, it's
Wow,
wild.
super weird. Is that like a bit of a flaw in the whole Arts Council funding, or in general, if you're trying to put together, like a poetry collection, for instance, or a series of events? I mean, how do you? What is your advice for people looking to do a similar thing?
Okay, we're gonna get straight into it. What is the flaw with the Arts
Oh, sorry,
Council?
Helen. Did you think this was going to be easy?
Okay. I think there's two questions there, right? Like,
I mean, there's a lot, I'm sorry.
one is about Arts Council funding generally and the sort of joys and the trials and tribulations of it. I think the Arts Council is genuinely amazing and is run by a lot of amazing people who really care about the arts, but because they have to report to the government and the government have a particular agenda, they are forced to demand quite a lot of us. And understandably, they want to, be sure that they're giving money to people who are actually going to do the thing that they say they're going to do. But yeah, it is quite ridiculous the amount of stuff that you have to sort of prove to them and the amount of work that you have to do before you can even be sure that you're going to get any money. Like, I spent probably, I mean, I was doing like at least one day a week for about months, for like 3 or 4 months working on the application. And I had no idea whether I was going to get any funding for it or not. And it was at a time when the Arts Council was turning down a lot of people for funding, and they stopped funding the English National Opera. Wait, is that
Yeah.
right? English National Ballet?
I thought it was the English National Opera. Or
Okay,
not
great.
stop funding, but they reduced funding. Did they reduce funding?
No, they stopped funding entirely, and they said we'll only fund you if you go to Manchester, which you can kind of understand, but also it's a bit brutal to everyone who currently works there that they have to uproot their lives to Manchester. So
Wild.
yeah, it's a difficult time for funding, is my feeling on it. But I just still feel very lucky to live in a country that has an arts council and has something where you can be anyone, and they really encourage people who've never applied for funding before to apply. You can be anyone, and if you have a good idea and you've planned it out properly and you've, made a sensible budget and you've paid yourself, because they do want you to pay yourself eventually in the budget that you ask for, they'll give you money to do something fun. And I think that is amazing. And then I think your second question was about advice for people applying for funding. I mean, that I could, there's so much that you could say about that. I would say, I mean, specifically thinking about Arts Council England funding, and this is, I should also caveat that this is also, we're talking about Arts Council England, and other parts of the UK have different funding bodies, from like funding wings from the government. So you should go and look those up if you're elsewhere in the country, and things work slightly differently. And I think there's maybe slightly less. Slightly less strict. I've heard Creative Scotland is nicer. Yeah, I don't know if that's actually true, but I mean, Scotland seems
Got the remit
better.
anyway.
Yeah, Scotland seems better, right? I guess the main advice I would say is, well, two things. As I've already alluded to, pay yourself well. Pay yourself, budget for more hours of your time than you think will be necessary, because it's probably going to be necessary. Like, projects always take longer than you think they will take. And I don't know, I think as artists and writers and whatnot, we are trained to think that our time is not, monetarily at least, valuable. And that, if I take an extra hour editing this poem, that's on me. But no, it's all part of the process. And that's what they, they say that they want to pay you for. So, get that coin.
Exactly.
And you'll only be kicking yourself later if you end up working loads of extra hours and you're like, well, I really could have just asked for more money and I didn't. I have to do it. And the second thing I would say is the Arts Council certainly have lots of like they have people whose job it is to advise applicants, potential applicants on their applications. So why not take advantage of that and send your application to someone who works at the Arts Council before you submit it, and they can tell you exactly what you might need to tighten up or be more specific on, or can you get an extra partner here? How can you prove that you're going to reach these people that you said you're going to reach? How can you like what's missing from your budget? All of these things that you might not have thought about. And it's always great to get an extra pair of eyes on something, and that's for free. So do that. Those are good, I guess, two things of the many things I could say.
No, I think that's excellent advice. Make it watertight and back yourself. Which, as you say, as artists, we're trained not to really. I mean, so often we're asked to do things for free, or we're told that, the arts don't really have an impact, which is such a joke. So no, I think, that's excellent advice. Thank you so much for giving me two very clear answers from a massive, loaded question that I just came straight out the gate with. Hopefully this will be a bit easier. Tell us a bit about the, if you want to, the process of putting together bylines, putting together the anthology, the project, running it. What was that like?
Great. So it was really, I mean, I think I like running projects. That's just something I think that I have done my whole life, and so I like doing all the admin and the planning and the having creative control over things. But what made this particularly lovely is that there's been such an amazing response to it. And from the very first moment that I tweeted out that I had an idea that I might want to do a project for Bi Plus Poets, and maybe at this point we should say that for this for the purposes of this project, it encompasses people who identify as bisexual, pansexual, queer, or just in any way under the Bi Plus umbrella, feeling attracted in any way to more than one gender. So I sent out this tweet saying I might want to do a project for Bi Plus Poets. Is that something people would be into? And I got so many replies and DMs being like, please tell me more, put me on the mailing list, blah blah blah. And I was like, oh God. And from I started I like created a Google form for people to give me a bit more information about themselves so that I could go to the Arts Council and be like, oh, I have, 100 people who've already said that they're interested in it, and they are 50% of them are professionals and 20% of them are international and all of that. So there's all this interest. Yeah, it was kind of staggering that even just from that idea, people were already excited about it. And then at every stage, it just seemed to get a lot of support, which was really nice. And just seeing people spontaneously be like, this is amazing. This has made me feel like empowered, or I've had a couple of people say that because of this project, they've come out to certain people in their lives that they hadn't felt comfortable doing so before, or they had considered themselves under the Bi Plus umbrella, whereas they hadn't before. All of these amazing things obviously just makes me really want to do the project, and makes me feel really excited about all the data crunching and all of that stuff, all of the maybe less exciting stuff. It makes me feel just, yeah, overjoyed that I could do something like this and that it could find the people that it was meant to find.
That's incredible, though. I mean, it really shows that there was a need for it. There's a need for it on our bookshelves,
Yeah, I get. Yeah, I guess. I mean, I don't want to be like the world needed me to do this project because anyone else could have done it. I just happen to have the idea and the time first.
Yeah, I sort of feel like you can absolutely do that a little bit though. but no, I mean, I guess don't downplay like the importance of it. Like we've got so much in terms of like queer literature and, you know, like some wonderful kind of gay poems and lesbian poets and stuff that we can all follow and enjoy. But having a very specific for bi people and just reading through all of the different poems in that page, hearing people perform as well was like such an incredible experience for me to kind of look around and go like, oh my God, everyone here is like under the bi umbrella and talking about it. And it really gave like a sense of belonging, but also that legitimacy of being queer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Which,
totally.
yeah.
I mean, I think it's such a thing for like this specific experience, right? That you are made to feel like uncertain of your up for some people anyway, a lot of people I think. Me, definitely. that you're made to feel uncertain of using this identity marker. I think it's why a lot of people are saying queer now instead of bisexual. I mean, obviously some people still say bisexual. Plenty of people still say bisexual, but we're definitely seeing a rise, I think, in people who just identify as queer because it's a very fluid thing. And that is, people sort of make us feel like that fluidity is something that we shouldn't be proud of, or like that means you haven't made your mind up yet, or that means you can't use this word if you're not sure about it, or if you change your mind sometimes.
Or
I
if
mean,
you're
isn't
in a relationship that's, you know, straight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's such a thing that I've heard a lot of people talk about. And even people who, like, poets who I know who are bi plus, like, it's really established poets who I approached to submit and just to say, hey, I'd love to read some of your poems. Some of them later told me that they didn't submit because they felt, you know, they were in a same-sex relationship, even if they were like, outwardly, you know, they'd said that they were bisexual. Yeah, so all of these things make it harder, I think, for us to have a community because we're all slightly ashamed. More, I don't know, not more so than the average LGBT, but you know, it's all
Shame.
there. Yeah, shame, shame, shame.
Oh.
But
Maybe part of it is shame, and maybe part of it is kind of not wanting to take up space that you feel someone else more legitimately takes up.
totally, which is a kind of shame, no? Like it's this imposter syndrome.
Okay, shame. Yeah.
Then, you know, what could be queerer than being fluid and changing? And it's all kind of, it goes back to this very binary idea of, well, everything, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need the binary. Let's
No, we don't need binaries. Get rid of them. All
Boo, boo, binary.
the
Wonderful. I love that. No, but I love it. I feel like I've like really become like absorbed in the whole, you know, like people like the MB show that are putting on loads of non-binary drag artists and performance artists, which is fantastic. And then like last year was just this wonderful kind of like hodgepodge of kind of abandoning the binary events like bylines, like NB show. It was just wonderful. So yeah, more of that in 2024, please.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah. So yeah, imposter syndrome. It's a weird one, isn't it? I'm hoping the more art that we get, like bylines, the more people will kind of be able to move away from that feeling.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what the solution to imposter syndrome is because I feel like it's a term that I've known, like, you know, since I was a teenager or whatever. But hearing, and I feel like it is something that people talk about, maybe not enough, but I feel like that has not prevented me from having it. I guess, personally, anyway, I think it's just practice, right? Of like, I know, I guess with any kind of brain thing, you have to be like, oh, I see that this is coming from a place of imposter syndrome. I'm going to choose to do the action or say the thing anyway. And just hope for the best. But yeah, I don't know. Do you still feel it with, I mean, all of your many, many hats?
My many hats. I feel imposter syndrome in almost every sphere of my. No, I'm kidding. I'm I
I think I'm getting better with my imposter syndrome because I think I know who I am. Like I know I'm not, somebody who went to university and studied things. I'm not like an academic rooted artist. I'm not, fancy in terms of these things, but I know I've got my own whatever that some people get something out of, and that's enough for me. I'm not trying to be anything else. And then in terms of queerness and gender, I think I've let a lot of it go, really. I care less, but I am 34, so I don't know if it's just an age thing as
Yeah,
well.
I think it definitely it is an age thing, but combined with doing the work over those years, if you know what I mean. Like I feel like you can get to the age of like 70 and still be deeply insecure
Oh
if you
God,
have to
yeah.
talk about it.
Insecure and like with all these prejudice that you've accumulated over the years. Yeah, it's very easy to do. No,
Totally.
I am like a pattern bus. It's almost like a compulsive pattern buster. Like if I see that I'm, locking myself in a really unhealthy kind of like mental thing, I'm like, okay, cool, let's spend like 6 months on picking that.
Well, that's
But
great.
it is great. I don't know. God, yeah, I think being in a healthy relationship is one of those things you're like, okay, I'm the damage. This is, I don't know why we're going down this route, but I think I have this, we're going to do it anyway. I had this realization of like, I'm pretty damaged from like previous things. And then is it fair that like my partner doesn't get the happiest, fullest, most authentic version of me? And so I think I'm trying to work towards that for myself as well as like for everyone else. But yeah, there we go.
I mean, I guess there's a couple of things in there that, like, sure, you know, if that's a motivation to be happier, then great, do it. But also, like, you know, we're just people. We're all just trying our best.
Oh my
We're all
God,
just,
yeah.
we're all a mess, and you know, you get whatever you get, and that's fine, I think.
Oh no, definitely. Like I'm 100% still chaos. But I think you can spend quite a lot of time living in shame or like living in that, that coming from that shameful place. And I think it's so nice to not, because
Yeah, it's so nice to be happy.
it is actually, isn't it funny that it's nice to be happy?
Yeah, I love it when I'm happy.
Oh my God, like looking at people's dating profiles when they're like, I just really like to have fun and be happy. It's like, okay, yeah. I think part of unpicking the shame as bi people or as queer people of kind of anything is looking as well at kind of what who's come before us. And having that, that history as well that we can kind of look back on and stand on and say, actually, like when we're not, what the papers say we are, which is like some weird new fad of being non-binary or being confused and bisexual. Although I am confused a lot of the time. So I think it's wonderful that as well that one of your other projects is Dead Women Poet Society.
Wow, what a good segue.
Thank you. It was really smooth and subtle.
I love
Thank you. Please tell us about that.
it. Yes, so Dead Women Poet Society is, I guess, another project that I've been co-running with my pals Jasmine Sims and Lily Arnold since 2015. In the beginning, there was also Sarah Fletcher and Katie Byford. And we started it when we were students, and ja it was Jasmine's idea actually that everything that we were studying in English was all men. And even in 2015, like the curriculum was just full of men. It's really quite shocking now that I think about it. I don't know whether it's any better now. I feel like it's maybe not. But so the idea of the event is that we would talk about women poets from the past. And her other sort of thought about this is, you know, poets who have to read their own work over and over, especially if they're sort of touring a new book or whatever, often actually get bored of it and would much rather be given the opportunity to talk about somebody else's work, someone whose work they love. And so it was an opportunity for poets to get on stage and just be effusive about the work of a dead woman poet that they love and whose work has influenced them, and sort of explore that relationship between the woman writing in the past and them today, and sort of uncovering that lineage that, you know, we're all told about the men, but I think there is a real sort of line that you can draw between the women writers through the past and up to the present. And our guest poets are women or non-binary. So we're just not interested in men, basically.
Yeah, I feel
And it started off, it would just be the four of us, as it was at the beginning, talking about poets that we liked, and trying to get more people to know about them, basically. And then as it progressed, we also got an Arts Council project grant for that, for a tour. So we were able to pay, you know, proper poets, not that we weren't proper, but I mean like more established poets, to, you know, a decent wage to research and prepare and perform this talk. And then all of them, like a summary of them, go online, or some kind of record of them go online. And the poets also respond creatively in some way to the poets that they've chosen. So often that's they've written a poem inspired by their chosen dead woman poet, or they might we've had a song in the past from Jade Cuttle. Nina Minya Pals did a zine inspired by Teresa Hack Yung Cha, which was very cool, and was actually later included in an exhibition about women's clothes at the National Poetry Library. Yeah, very cool. And like recently, Safia Khan did like this sort of fake interview between her and her chosen dead woman poet.
I love that.
Yeah, it was really cool. So she used all of the actual words, that she'd found that this poet had written and said, and she just asked sort of intentionally inane questions like, either poke fun at the literary interview genre, or or she's also a GP, or no, sorry, a doctor. I don't know if she's a GP, but there was a medical intake questionnaire as well that she was sort of poking fun at as well.
Oh my God, amazing.
Yeah, her poet was Maisie Adda. It was, yeah, that was excellent. And you can read those on the Dead Woman Poets website. It's deadwomanpoets.com.
Fantastic. And that will be in the description of this podcast. Because that
Great.
is such a cool, it's such a cool idea. And as you say, it shows like the lineage and it shows where we've come from, who wrote before us. I absolutely adore that. And I feel like I kind of got like a little bit of a taster of that at Queer Britain for the Bylines launch when you had people, you gave them the option of being able to read a by dead woman's poem.
Yeah, it was just a bi poet from the past. Yeah, so they didn't have to be
Oh
women
yeah.
on the occasion. So we had like James Baldwin and things.
Oh yeah, of course. Okay. Oh my God, yeah. That was beautiful. That was really fantastic to have that kind of woven in between the contemporary poets as well. I loved it.
Yeah, so we do a that's part of the Dead Woman Poets event, is that we have an open mic where you can read a poem of your own, but if you do, you have to read a poem by a dead woman poet as well. And we give everyone as they come in a poem by a dead woman poet, so they can just read the one that they've been given, or of course they can share one that they love that's close to their heart. And it's really great, actually. Like it really it introduces people to lots more dead woman poets during the course of the evening, but also people sort of do an impromptu their own kind of like talk. They're like, oh, I love this poem because X, or like I first read this poem because Y. And yeah, you just get a tiny snippet, and it really makes you feel like, no, this is like a wider thing. This isn't just these two people who we've paid to get on stage and talk about it. It's everyone in this room is feeling this connection with women poets of the past who are still not being very widely taught on curricula.
Yeah, well, because otherwise, how would you, I suppose, discover a lot of, the dead women poets? If they're not on the curriculum, unless you know kind of where to look, it can be quite hard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, even in school, right? We always, I mean, well, speaking of bisexual poets, we always do Shakespeare. How often are you told that he, like, are you, how often are you boldly just told, like, we think that he likes men and women?
I mean, yeah. And then as an adult with kind of like the queer goggles on, you look back and you're like, this is a ton of queer shit. There's so much queerness in literally everything he wrote ever.
Yeah, totally. And the same with Virginia Woolf. Like, I did Mrs. Dalloway, and we there's a kiss, there's a same-sex kiss in it. And obviously we did talk about that, but like
Were just friends, right?
it was kind of seen as a, I don't know, it was like, oh, this is an erotic moment, it's a metaphor for
Oh
something else. And not just seen like with face value of like, or placed within a context of Virginia Woolf's life, or even the queer company that she was writing in, or queer literature at that time. I recently read No Modernism Without Lesbians. I mean, recently, like a couple of years ago, and it's amazing. Like, it covers four lesbian or like women who love women. Not they weren't all writers. I don't think one of them. Was Sylvia Beach, who owned the or founded Shakespeare and Co., the famous bookshop in Paris, the famous English language bookshop in Paris. But it really like shows you how central these queer women were to modernism, and again how we're not, that's not taught in schools. It's all about Ezra Pound and I don't know, fucking Picasso.
fucking Picasso. I don't think anyone's come on the podcast and said fucking Picasso, but
Well,
be a
I'm here
tradition.
to
I love that. Yeah, there's definitely been a, I think it's a willful ignorance. I think a lot of it was kind of born through Section 28 sentiment. Hopefully, I was going to say hopefully that's going to
it.
be eradicated, but it seems to be sort of creeping back in, which is hard. But we've got so much in terms of like community wisdom sharing, and we've got the internet. God bless the internet.
God bless it.
God bless the internet, and it doesn't make the dial-up sound like I had when I was a kid. So God, I feel really old. So I do feel like it's getting harder and harder to push this like heteronormative narrative, especially when it comes to very queer artists.
Yeah, I think definitely. Well, look, I mean, we both live in London, right? Obviously, I feel like in London, you're surrounded by queerness and queer people who are visibly, queer. I can imagine that elsewhere in the country that is still a struggle, and it's still difficult to see people who are visibly out or to sort of find your tribe. So yeah, the work is not finished, but it's definitely better than it was, even when I was at school.
It's far from finished. So I did not grow up in London. I grew up in a very like conservative area, and you could pick out the queer kids. That there were only, you could count them on one hand. And weirdly, when I went back and I started working in a school there, I ran the after school and morning club with a lesbian, and it was just me and her, and then her brother was gay, and everybody else. I'm sure there's like other kind of queers like under the radar, but it felt like we were the only queers in the village, and everyone was like, look at you guys, just doing your thing. It's super weird in a lot of the country still.
Yeah, for sure.
But there we go. You also wear a lot of hats, and you're amazing. You previously worked with the Poetry Society. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so for 6 years I was education coordinator and then officer at the Poetry Society, running its Young Poets Network and booking its Poets in Schools program. It was my first proper job, like my first full-time like not a limited contract job.
Wow, what a
So
great first proper job.
I know it was insane. Like,
That's amazing.
I actually didn't apply for the job I applied. They were open. They were open for a few different jobs at the time, and I applied for a different job. Like I didn't apply for this one because I was like, "That's my dream job. I'm not ready for that yet." And then Judith, the director, rang me and was like, "Helen, do you want to just apply for the for the education role?" And I was like, "Okay, yes, please, Judith."
Oh my God, that's amazing.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's, I mean, it's because I had done an internship with them previous year, so I'd spent like 3 weeks in the office. So she knew who I was, and like I'd worked with the education team as part of that internship. So the Poetry Society is always very keen to sort of develop or like support people who they've connected with in like early in their career, if you know what I mean. Like,
Yeah, sure.
so I think, having now worked on the inside, I think, you would want to offer an opportunity or an interview to someone who had done an internship, because even just the interview experience would be great. So I can see why she did that, retrospectively, and that makes total sense within the ethos of the organization. I was just very lucky that she wanted me, and that I got the job.
Must have been a great confidence boost as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was just wild. I'd never worked in an office before, really. I mean, I'd done this internship the previous year, but like, I didn't know. I mean, you don't have to do this on the new phones that they have, but on the phones that they had at the time, you had to press 9 to dial outside of the office, which is apparently a common thing that everyone knows. Didn't, for example. And like all this basic stuff that I was like, I'm so young. And for many years I was the, like, everyone be like, "Oh, Helen, she's so young." And then I stayed there for 6 years. And so more people joined who were younger than me. And I was like, "Oh, this is, I'm getting older. This is interesting." I'm no longer the most inexperienced or the most, like the person that is the butt of the, you're
Yeah,
so joke.
the green one. Oh, the circle of life.
The circle of life. But yeah, I mean, I'm very, very, very lucky to have had that job. I think especially as a poet. Obviously, to get a job working in the arts, for anyone who wants to work in the arts, to get that job is amazing. But I think as a poet, it gave me enough, like, just so many networks and introduced me, a young 22-year-old as I was then. People knew who I was because I was booking them to visit schools, or I was asking them to write for Young Poets Network, or I'd met them at the National Poetry Competition Awards do. So it was, yeah, I feel like I've cheated. Like I've totally cheated the system and just managed to get ahead. I don't know how much of that is imposter syndrome and how much of that, like, there's
I was
definitely a
going to
grain of
say,
truth.
yeah, that sounds like imposter syndrome, because it sounds like you deserved it as well. Did it give you quite like a unique perspective on kind of the poetry community and how poetry works in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it was I learned so much. And while I was working there, I think I was probably maybe the person in the country who knew the most about what opportunities there were for young poets, because I was updating Young Poets Network with, they have a listings of what's going on. So like I just knew what was going on across the whole of the UK and even beyond that, which was amazing. And like for some, again, for someone who's, just interested in the arts, you've got a job in poetry, maybe you don't need that information, but that I, while I was updating those things, I was still in the young poets bracket, so I could go and apply for some of those things.
Oh
So
my
like
God. Amazing.
I received an email from the Roundhouse saying the Roundhouse Poetry Collective is open for applications, and I applied as well as putting it on the Young Poets Network. I got in.
My God, I love that.
Yeah. So
Like the best position you could possibly have been in at the time.
yeah, definitely. I felt very lucky, and I still feel lucky to have worked there. Yeah, but yeah, I guess, I suppose it is also a very specific viewpoint through which to see the poetry world. And it's like it's interesting now being on the outside and seeing what they're putting out, what the kind of copy that I would be writing, and how, as someone who doesn't know what's going on behind the scenes, like it's interesting to see their position from a third party perspective, I guess, their position as one of the many organizations in the poetry world, and one of the many kinds of ways of engaging with poetry. For 6 years, that was like all I knew, basically, or it was the perspective that I had. But now it's interesting to see what they kind of represent and what they do as one of the stars within the constellation of poetry.
Yeah, sure. It sounds like they offered like a really, really strong foundation, and then now you get to kind of experiment and explore the poetry world from different angles.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's so now I work at the Poetry Translation Centre, or I've got a 2 year gig with them running events as part of their 20th birthday, which is now this year. It's 2024. Happy birthday to the
Happy
Poetry
birthday.
Translation Centre. And it is obviously it's still within poetry, but it's loads of poets who I didn't know before, or not, I've not worked with them before. I might have read their work, but I haven't worked directly with them before, because the Poetry Translation Centre, the PTC, is just a specialist in this area. So they are the people you'd direct people to if you wanted to run an event on, I don't know, Latinx poetry or Persian poetry or whatever. You'd direct them to the PTC. So now I'm learning so much in this new job, about all of this completely different cohort of poets, and about translation and translators as well. So there's endless things to be learned, and like endless perspectives from which to see it. I think the one that I don't that is not so strong for me, like my knowledge base, is maybe the performance scene, which I know a little bit about, but especially after the pandemic, I'm like, what's going on? Who's running nights these days? Maybe you could tell me.
Yeah, like what's happening? I mean, obviously there's an excellent online night called Rebel Riot.
Oh yeah, good.
although we are currently on hiatus, so I shouldn't promote us. But no, there's a ton of really exciting things going on always. But yeah, the pandemic really kind of made things a bit weird.
Yeah.
And also COVID is not over. And I say that I'm still sniffly now, but I've had like 2 months of illness, and I just feel like I'm avoiding people. So as much as I love the performance and spoken word scene, I'm keeping it at arm's length for now. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's partly why it hasn't come back, because people are sick and they're worried about getting sick, totally understandably. They don't want to get sick. I don't want to get sick.
No. A lot of people don't care about getting sick though, and I'm like, how would you? But I think they get sick and they have like 2 days where they feel a bit rubbish, and then they're fine. But yeah, I mean, there's a ton of really good online stuff, which I'm always going to plug, because I think online is fantastic. Because oh my God, what, I can get a poet from like somewhere in Africa or somewhere in Canada, and they're going to come and share their words with us as well. It's just magnificent. Like, I love it.
Yeah, it is amazing. It really did like open up so much.
Yeah, but then I mean, yeah. So I'm kind of like fascinated with the translation thing, because I think in general, like UK publishing has got this, very kind of like homogenous kind of scene. And I think poetry particularly, when I read poems by poets who English isn't their first language, poems that have been translated, I just think there's such a wealth of incredible poetry out there.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing also to learn more about all the different ways that poetry is written, and the different things that different cultures value in poetry. Like, I think in Anglophone poetry, we kind of really shy away from sentiment at the moment. We shy away from sentimental language or sort of flowery language. Not so much in the past, I hasten to add, but then in another culture the tastes are completely different. And so it's just another reminder, like, to decenter your own experience, like your understanding of the poetry or the world or anything is not the default and is not what everyone else necessarily agrees with, or values even. And whatever you think good poetry is, someone somewhere else in the world is looking at your favorite books and being like, this is weird.
Not like it's so I've got what have I got? I've got a collection of poems, kind of like, oh my God, what's the word? Why is my brain not working? Like spiritual poems from people like Rumi, Hafiz, like, you know, over the span of history. And it's really fascinating because I think if you read Christian poems, they're not always quite the same. There's maybe not quite the same like relationship between God and the poet as some very, very horny other poets have written. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, oh, flirting with God, very kind of like erotic sexual relationship with God kind of poems that have been written over the vast span of history. And so I find that like really fascinating as well from like a cultural viewpoint of people's relationship, not just to God, but like to other things in the world as well. It could be literally like anything, and it's like, oh, this is what's prioritized, or this is kind of like the norm over there. So I do like that.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's always just learning things, isn't it? It's always just fascinating to learn things.
Yeah.
If you're looking for horny Christian poems.
Oh, I've been reading Jay Hulme.
Oh yeah, Jay. I know Jay a little bit.
Like, right, okay. I fucking love Jay's poems so like so much. Like I'm reading, what am I reading? Not The Vanishing Song, the other one, the other collection. And like I absolutely adore it. It's so fucking good.
Yeah, they're really cool. They're a great person to follow on Twitter as well because they're just always posting really interesting, like,
And weird shit as well, you
yeah,
know.
I
Oh,
love
I've
it.
just found bones, or like I've just like crept into someone's grave or something. And you're like, that's cool.
Disclaimer, I don't think Jay has ever crept into someone's grave. Let's not slander them.
No, well, yeah, okay. Actually, no, I feel like in the foreword to this book, he was like, yeah. And so in the foreword to this poetry collection that I'm reading, he was like, yeah, I had to be persuaded to like not just like lie down in this person's grave. And I was like, oh my God.
Okay.
So no, I'm not making it up, but if it is slander, then I take it back. I'm very sorry. And yeah.
If you're listening, write in and let us know
Jay, if you're
how
listening,
it's going
come on the podcast, please, and I can interview you very badly and chaotically, like I do everyone else.
You can totally get him. Great.
That'd be amazing. Right. Have you any final words of wisdom before I ask you two more things?
Fine, no. Final words of wisdom.
All
Oh,
time.
I was gonna say, if you're looking for, there is actually a tradition of horny Christian poems, but
Oh, yeah.
because we are Protestant in this country, the Protestants weren't so horny, or like
No, kind of known.
they kept the horny secret. Do check out the Song of Songs if you want a little sexy biblical poem. There's loads of weird stuff in the Bible. It's kind of amazing.
I mean, there's loads of, yeah.
Yeah. That's my only word of wisdom. Check out the horny stuff in the Bible.
I love that. That's such a good note to end on. Thank you. And so my final two questions are, one, if you were a mythical creature, what would you be and why?
I don't know.
How is this not like on the top of your mind all the time?
Yeah, I should have prepared for this one. I'm trying to think of mythical creatures. Do you know what? Actually, I got for Christmas a book that I asked for called Weird Medieval Guys, because I'm also a nerd, and I love medieval stuff. So Weird Medieval Guys is a Twitter account, and an Instagram account that just shares images from medieval manuscripts, like little kind of the doodles, like not, you know, the grand paintings, but the sort of doodles in the margins, or the illustrations for manuscripts, and they're amazing and they're so weird. They're like the weirdest thing ever, and I love it.
Wait, I'm gonna look at Weird Medieval.
Guys.
Weird Medieval Guys book out now. Okay. Oh yeah,
So
this super fucking weird. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh my God, thank you. This is excellent.
It's so good, and I'm just a bit of a medieval nerd for I don't know why, but I love all of that stuff. So I mean, I probably should have prepared for this, but as I haven't prepared for it, I'm gonna say one of the weird animal slash fruits in the painting "The Garden of Earthly Delights" by Hieronymus Bosch, which is just this absolutely mental painting. It's supposedly like, well, so it's from medieval times, and it people have like debated over the meaning of what he painted over the years. So you could interpret it as on one panel it's hell, on one panel it's like the sin of lust and pleasure in on earth, and then on the other panel it's paradise. Sorry, the earthly one could be paradise, or it could be sin. You know what I mean? Like, because everyone's naked. Everyone's
Depends
naked in it.
there is some shit in there, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of insane. So I want to be like one of these giant like birds with legs that are eating people and sticking out of an enormous strawberry the size of a house or something like that. That's what
Oh
I'm
my
gonna go.
God, I love that. That is one of the best answers I've ever had. Also, I'm not entirely sure what it says about you.
Says that I'm a nerd.
Yeah, but like a horny nerd. Like
Nerd.
that's fabulous. I mean, that's our favorite kind of people. Wow. Okay, cool. I'm not actually going to put your photo on the thing of this podcast. I'm just going to choose at random one of those giant
Please.
legged bird fruit things. Thank you. Oh my God.
Everyone should go and look at this painting because it's insane.
Everyone should,
So
yeah. But I feel like you can look at it and then years later you'll still, be coming back to look at it and still not really understand what is going on.
yeah, and still seeing new things.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, it's so good. Oh my God. We need poetry that's based off that, like just a whole collection.
Yeah, well, so this was the reason that I came across it was because it was a NaPoWriMo prompt. So NaPoWriMo is National Poetry Writing Month, which is very informal. But there's this like the challenge is to write a poem every day in April. And there's this website called NaPoWriMo.net that does daily prompts during April, and it's really good. Like the prompts are amazing. You can use them all year round. But the prompt one year for one particular day in NaPoWriMo was to look at this painting and just write inspired by it. So I did. And the poem is in my pamphlet, The Barman.
Oh my God. So I'm
Yeah.
going to ask you if you'd like to share any of your work. So I kind of feel like we have to hit that one note. I mean, you can choose whatever poem you like, but wow.
Yeah, we could do that one. Why not? It's like, honestly, not that. So The Barman is a pamphlet that's about this character called The Barman, who doesn't have another name, and his relationship with the speaker, who's also unnamed, and it's told backwards through time. And this poem, like, honestly, he's not really in this poem. It's just in the final two lines. But I wanted to include it because it kind of gives a vibe that is coherent with the rest of the poems in the book. And I just like the weirdness of it. I just love this poem. I mean, sorry, I love the painting, so
You
it's
can
nice to
love your poem as well. That's totally fine. If you're listening,
Well,
please pause the podcast now to go and find the photo at the photo, the painting. Yeah, the selfie. Go and find the painting so that you can look. Is that a good idea, or do you want people to come and
yeah.
yeah, okay.
Totally, but you know, bonus points if you can find all of the images in this poem within the painting.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Okay, right. Take it away.
If you can go to hell for lust, can I give you this trout for safekeeping? Don't look like that with your hand on my wrist. I am an owl staring at what I've done. Will you hide with me in this tight red cone? Will you carry me on your back when I'm trapped in a clam? Take me into the trees.
Place a ball in my mouth with your beak. I am facing the biggest fish of my life. Put a toad on my chest and touch me. Put me in a drum and bang me. Look at that man skating on ice. Oh, barman, I'm trying to make this boat go, but I just don't know how.
Oh my God, that was amazing. So I definitely found a few. But then it's like one of those things, the more you look, the more there is to see. And it's just, it's so overwhelming. I love that as a poem, though. It's gorgeous.
Thanks. Yeah, I just love how weird, like, I just love how weird that painting is. I'm obsessed with it.
It's so weird. And it's so good. I love weird art, though. Like, yeah,
me too.
Big fan of weird art. Helen, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's been so nice to chat.
Yay! And yeah, anything that you've got coming up, any gigs, any events or anything that you're running that you want to tell people about?
So if you're interested in Bylines, we're doing a few more celebration events. The next one is at Gaze the Word next month, which sold out in like 2 days, which is insane. We're also going to York, Brighton, Glasgow and Edinburgh, hopefully with more areas to be announced. So just if you're interested in that, it's on at @by_poets on Twitter and Instagram, or you can head to my website, which is helenbowell.co.uk/by-lines, and all of the information is on there.
Fabulous. And it will be in the description of this podcast. Helen, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.